Welcome to everybody today. Thank you so much for coming out. This is day two of whatever you want to call the seminar, but it's Healed by Fascination overall. And for those of you who's new today that wasn't able to make it, welcome. I'm glad you came. I've been astounded to see how many incredible musicians and people of talent are here of every walk. And it's really really incredible. Around every corner I seem to run into another guitar player or French horn player or drummer. We hope to link up in some way over the week with all of you. Yesterday we talked about the river of life, a waterfall in the sense of God's unending gift of ideas in interaction with our own lives, and how that turns our lives into poetry. That's kind of the essence of what we talked about. And we ended the day by putting a box in the corner there, and that box was for your input, your stream of consciousness writings, maybe your ideas for a song, maybe a prayer or a meditation. Those are all welcome in that box. And we're going to get to that today a little later. I saw some entries in there, so I'm excited to see what we got. The one agreement that you make putting something in the box is that you are willing to stand up and share what you put in there, or talk about it, or tell where it came from, or what have you. Maybe it's a song idea, et cetera, et cetera. Today, I'd like to talk a little bit about each of our own gifts, how God has blessed us with our own unique and particular voice. Regardless, and this camp has so many, it's unbelievable. I mean, I talked to John on the chainsaw earlier, and some people just know how to sing a chainsaw. And some people know how to make great tomato soup. So the gift takes many, many colors, but today we're going to kind of talk about it in terms of that voice and the inspiration for that. And to do that, I'd like to just start with a song. This is a song I wrote for a Lutheran men's convention. It talks about building, because the voice is not only given, but it's practiced, it's played at, it's tooled with, it comes into contact and encounters foolishness, and it's a blueprint of sorts that gets it all together, a blueprint for living. This is called the Blueprints.
From where you've been, for this house we built. given, ocean and sky, the wild of the forest, were here long before us and meant for our children. We bring our differences, our hopes, our faith and fear. We'll build a home for love in this family, for life. The earth round this house, we plant a garden. God's grace for our rebirth. Lend your voice in celebration, lend your hand in lifting up. This is the day of creation, built on the cornerstone.
Yesterday, with a quote that I'd like to repeat to begin today, if I could. One of my favorite poets is William Stafford, and it was wonderful hearing John Grover speak yesterday as well, because we have a common love of this poet. But a big emphasis of his is engagement between life and the heart of you. And that's what makes poetry, is that touching, that crashing, that encounter, maybe that bliss, all that comes together to make poetry. And we ended the day with this quote, "It is impossible to write something that does not move us forward as community when this now is greeted with the best of us and includes all the rest of us." So I thought for today, with the question of what is our voice, it might be a good question to ask, what is the best of us? Or what is the best of you? And maybe that starts to become the big question for how do you develop a voice, or what is your particular voice? Mine started in India with my father, who was a missionary, with my mother, playing a phonograph record, classical records. And I walked into the living room, and my father was playing Brahms or something on that old, you know, the people probably here, some are too young to remember phonograph records, but he was playing it in the living room, and I broke into tears, and I was like, what is going on? I was just a youngster. But I realized music had a special, some kind of strange hold on me. And I often broke into tears in church or found myself really affected the first time I heard the Beatles. After church music took over me, then the Beatles got me.
Last night I said these words to my girl.
Somehow that I would be called in that direction, and I did not know how or when or why. What calls you? What has hit you? What makes the hackles rise at the back of your neck? Maybe that's one of the starts as to how we're being called into our voice. The essence, though, at that age and as I came to the States in a continual frustration of mine, is that I realized I really didn't know what my voice was. I did not know how I was to sing. I imitated a lot of artists as I went, and I still do. And that's, I don't think that's a bad thing, because you have those you love and that you hold highly in your opinion. But as far as what my voice was, I didn't know, and I still don't completely know, and I wanted to pass that on to you, that I think this is persistently about not knowing. And yes, it's something that matters to you, but what is it? What is my voice for today? How can I find that? Yes, it is God-given. I know I have something God-given, but what is it? How do I express it? I know many of you are in jobs. Well, I can't say that here while you're at Holden, because to me, I don't know of any better jobs than I see you guys working here at Holden. It's just unbelievable. But a lot of people I know that are working jobs in the outside world are working jobs that suck, or that somehow suck in their life. And they've somehow got some kind of hard friction with purpose and what they're doing. So it's certainly about not knowing. And the questioning life for me has been something that has always just been essential. It was partly my father, who was a questioning theologian, Jim James. And with my faith too, I found it that I just love the fact that here too there's a ripe and fertile ground for questions. I think that is an incredible growing ground, a field for growth and for movement. I'm reminded today about what Fred's wonderful theology talk was. He said, "A voice cries in the wilderness. What shall I preach? What do I preach? What is my voice?" And that to me is a persistent question. And I'd like to play for you a song that came out of my questioning, and it's the Micah 6, verse 6 passage. What shall I do, Lord, to give you favor? What shall I do for you, God? What does life in God mean? And it's called Ever Walk With Me. For those of you who don't remember the rest of the passage, he asks, "What shall I do, Lord? What is a good life?" And the prophet responds, "Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God." So, a song of questioning. This is called "Ever Walk With Me."
Ever walk with me, Lord, each night and day of joy. around me. How can I hear your call when at last grace has found me? Will I recognize it all? Is this song of sadness in the gladness by your knees? Hear your voices calling, come shepherd me.
Inescapable, and at some point our dreaming, what we talked about yesterday, rolling down words in stream of consciousness or in a song, our dreaming has to hit the pavement in some way. It has to get teeth. It has to be discovered in the doing and not figured out. I'm one of those guys that likes the sugar in the cabinet at the right place at the right time. I want to find it the same place. And my lovely wife, Tricia, is persistently moving it. It frustrates me to no end, and I don't know why. I just want things together, and I want them predictable. And that is the last thing I ever get. Ted Loader has, I'd like to read you a couple quotes if I could. There are two books that are in the bookstore now that I have found great strength in the last couple years. One is, I mentioned the poet William Stafford. This is called You Must Revise Your Life, and it's a wordy but incredible book about gaining the creativity of a child and thinking new again about writing. And this man's name is Ted Loader, and he's an incredible theologian, pastor of First United Methodist Church in Germantown in Philadelphia for years. And he's just got amazing insights into faith and grace. But this is from Ted Loader. He says, we're talking about this unknowing. We don't know. We have to do. We have to get in the mix of being intersected and crashed upon others. Surely mystery is an essential ingredient, if not the essential ingredient of our common life in the world. By mystery, I do not mean the vast oceans of knowledge in which we have not yet swum, but the infinite depths of being we can never plumb. Sometimes I think we like to talk about the mystery that we're going to figure out and have as our soundbite, or the mystery that we have as a button to push. Let's call the mystery in. But this mystery cannot be held. It can be encountered. It can't be figured out. It has to be discovered. And it's new every morning. Ray Bradbury has a great quote, and it gave birth to a song I'd like to play for you. He has a book called Zen and the Art of Writing, which is another incredible, incredible book. But he said, every morning I get out of bed and step on a landmine. I spend the rest of my day putting myself back together. And I think that's an apt quote for the writer's life. This is called Every Morning. these words. If not, I'm going to make them up as we go.
Yeah.
I hope you haven't heard it before. Inspiration along with that, but there's also work and scuffling to do it in great patience. Somehow you have to get round to the stuff, the plot, the makings of your voice, and I thought John said it so well yesterday when he was talking about how he relied on our memories to write poetry. He said, my memories, you remember, we have a comma. I'm not going to quote this correctly, but I'm going to try.
I couldn't either.
It was really wonderful where what it meant to me was the reason a poem and a song resonates with us is that we have some vestigial ancient memory that we hold in common of our lives, of our own lives, maybe the details, but maybe a grand memory as well. It has to do with that memory and collecting the elements of your life. And it reminded me of, has anybody seen To Kill a Mockingbird? The movie, Gregory Peck, finest role. And there's a scene in there I just love where the kids, Scout and Jim, go to an old oak tree and find in it a box of souvenirs. And in fact, the movie opens with a beautiful photograph of that box and a watch and a gold chain and a little clothespin or a few things in there. And I'd like to ask you, those of you who are going to be contributing to this, and those of you who are going to be contributing with chainsaws and other elements to the world, to think of your box of souvenirs and use them as footprints in the snow to create your plot. Use them as titles, maybe. Ray Bradbury gave me this idea when he encouraged you to look back and remember days somehow that there were bumps in your life or that something shook you up. For me, I could go back and remember the first move I ever saw. Some of you will know this, and I know I'm dating myself here. Let's see, what is it?
I have often walked down the street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I, seven stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live.
You know, that was My Fair Lady, and I saw that movie and it just blew me away. And songs, melody, and chords started to fill my head. And also scary elements with growing up. One, for example, one of my titles may be The Book Report. One, it was a morning in grade school. I went to school, boarding school. In those days, without thought, in India, that we were just sent off to boarding school. And it was actually quite a good school, but we were about 6 hours away from home. And I was very young still. I went to school young, and I had to write a book report. And I was not reading with my vision the way it was. I was not reading all that well at that point. And the teacher said, "No, I want you to pick a book to write." And I said, "Well, I don't think I can do it." And she said, "No, you can do it. Just pick a book. Pick one of these books." And so in my shy way, I kind of picked one, and it was the Flintlock Gun. I still remember that book. And I went home, and I cried on the bed, and I didn't tell my mom about it, and I just kind of sat on it for days. And that was somehow my way of dealing with issues. You had your own. But it was an incredibly scary point in my life. It seems like nothing right now, but you all have those stories. And if I were to take that title, let's see, like we're going to do in a minute with this box, and think of ways to let the sparks fly, like John does with poetry, like you do when you're trying to think of what you need for groceries or what you are writing for your next presentation or your song. Is I might think of ways I felt and sounds come into my head, but it's all done no matter your skill. This is not a matter of having the skill to do it. It's a matter of beginning that process, you know. Let's see. So we got, I was sad, so I'm going to pick a minor key.
Laid on the bed, I'm crying all afternoon. Mama's in the kitchen, sighing, going to tell her soon.
Okay, I got a couple lines about me worrying about my book report. The next line may have been,
what am I to do? I can't think of anything to say.
Okay, well, I thought that's kind of weak. I'd go back, I'd put down my guitar for a minute, I'd scratch for a minute, write some more. Mama's in the kitchen sighing. I don't want to bother her with my worries. Okay. Let's see.
Laying on the bed, I'm crying. It was the afternoon. Mama's in the kitchen crying. I'm going to tell her soon. I think I'm gonna just have to wait, suffer.
Well, that's bad too. Okay, so I'm being a fool in front of you. I'm finding words and stuff that makes sense. I would keep on picking away at that till I either decided it was a worthless song, or maybe a phrase or an element out of there may jump out at me. And then I would pick that, redefine it, and play it again. Some of this process, John said, was memory. A memory came to me. John also mentioned forgiveness. That third line was horrible. And I needed to get something better. I could put down my guitar and go do something else and say, I'm not worthy about this. But the worthiness cannot be part of the equation. It doesn't mean that everybody should be a musician and performing, but it means that the fact that you are engaging this mysterious river, you are engaging God in each moment. You're engaging your suffering and your joys is something that moves life forward. Already it's worthy. And to do that, though, takes probably the most difficult thing we can muster, which is self-forgiveness. So thank you for that insight yesterday. I really appreciate that. What I'd like to do now, if I could, is pick something that you've written in the box and take it out and ask the person. Remember, one of the agreements was that everybody agreed to be able to stand behind what they wrote. And this is not a quality contest again. This is not a search for a hit song to take back to Nashville. This was a way to be community. So would you please hand me the box? Let's see what we got here. I'm gonna ask some unconnected party to pick something out. Yeah, someone just sighed. Oh no, it's mine. Okay, we have a whole sheet of paper here. Can anybody identify this? And okay. So we've got Ben here has got something. Can you tell us about what would you like to get up and read this, or would you like me to read it, or
I don't know. I'd love to read it. I don't remember all the inspiration until I've read it because I don't remember what I wrote. Okay. This is just a reflection from last night after worship and seminars. We gush with praise for creation when we are gifted with the opportunity of awe. We embrace the symbolism and perhaps realism of living water as we soak in the warmth of community and the goodness, glory, and power of the Creator. But how does that water reach those who need it? How does one experience awe living in a slum? How does one experience community when their life has led to the crossing of a dangerous, unwelcoming border? How does one understand living water when unclean water diseases their community and powerful, frantic, and deadly water destroys all they have ever known? Is this living water the mystery? Or are we fools to this water because it is life, death, creation, destruction, 99% of our being, yet completely unknowable. All that can be said about water is that we are in need of it.
Does anybody have something they want to ask Ben about that or contribute? Beyond what I have to say or what Ben has to say on what he...
How long did it take you to write it?
About 5 minutes. I was just writing. Stream of consciousness.
Yeah. We talked yesterday about out of the thousands of ways there are to create stream of consciousness, just writing whatever, brain drain. In other words, you write what comes out of your head and unfettered by any kind of standard. You write and let your thoughts flow without judgment. But the other we were talking about is when you have a song idea, T for two, and you know the rhymes of the line are coming, you know the rhythm, and you're trying to fulfill that model. That's another way. And the third was a model from William Stafford where you let one word in a poem follow another and let syllables sound together. And you said yours was stream of consciousness.
But I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. You're a songwriter, right? And would you think about putting some of those elements into a song? I mean, that piece itself means something to everyone here. It means something to me without being a song. But is that how your songs begin? How do you approach?
Depends. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I start with ideas like that.
Mm-hmm.
Since I don't do it for a living, I just wait for inspiration to come around instead of having to come up with material on a regular basis. But I think when I have something that I think needs to be said, that's when the song comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said something that trips me up. He said, since I don't do it for a living, I just do it when I want to. And that freedom is amazing. But it's also the scourge of it's also really the fault of those, to me, who do it for a living. It's really hard, like William Stafford says this, that it's really hard to make your living as a writer. There's people in Nashville that write songs, 5 songs a day. They churn them out. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But if you want that freshness, if you want that freedom, free radicals of flying this way and that, I believe what that produces is a more narrow, predictable road. And there's nothing wrong with that, because as a musician, we play predictable grooves. This is a blues. I know it's an identifying factor to us. This is a shuffle. You know, you immediately get the rhythm. You know, it's an essence for dancing. But the mistake that we've made, I think, is that because we do it professionally, and I know I have done this many times, because we do it professionally, we lose our essence with it. I think it's the risk of being an artist, but I also think it's a responsibility. Every time I lose it, I have to somehow die again and be reborn, and your piece of paper there was part of that. I mean, so that's my comment on professionalism.
I don't think it's bad.
What? No, I don't think it's bad at all. I don't think anything inherently is qualitatively good or bad, but I think we just know what I know when the hackles on the back of my neck start standing up to something, and when something is, well, I don't want to go there. I was going to start quoting songs at home, but any other words?
I'd like to hear the line with the border in it again. You read the border, I think it's about the middle.
How does one experience community when their life has led to the crossing of a dangerous, unwelcoming border?
There's, I don't know, just for you, but you know, one thing, when I write, the stream of consciousness of the fast of the Stafford and so forth, and then you get to a point of higher energy in a line, say. That might not do it for you, but you can write, and then you get to a point of intensity. Language has particular extra energy above the rest of it. Lots of times that is the trail to go down. You know, follow that high energy point, and then you follow it. So I don't know if that's for you, and I just heard that once and so forth, but I said, that border thing there had lots of energy for me. And then you sort of check to see if other people did, and if it hit them too, then and then something you said about the professional, Robert Penn Warren had a thing, he said the danger about, you know, for being a piece of poet, is that successes can be dangerous because you start copying yourself. You know, and these guys writing 5 a day, you know, it's like they say, oh, this was successful, and now you start copying yourself, and that's where you lose your own identity, and your own identity in the language.
Oh, that's a great point. And the thing to remember now is that when you copy yourself, because you will, every writer here who has written extensively has copied, but that is not the end. That is the beginning, because you have noticed that, right? You have gotten a realization. That is why you simply must do it for its own end. You don't get rewarded for writing a nice piece. You get rewarded because you wrote it. And you know what I mean? It's the reward was in the writing. Your life was going down on paper. And because it can be appreciated, that's something we celebrate. But you know what I mean? So often we go on that essence of reward, and it makes artists go back and say, how can I get yesterday again? You know?
Well, I think partly why people talk to themselves is because people say, oh, you know, that was a great tune, or if not just in songwriting or writing poetry, but if you are a carpenter or if you're a nurse or whatever you might do, if something works and people are happy with it, then you want to recreate that because it's safe. And it's really risky to do it differently the next time. And it's also hard. It's much easier to approach, you know, like if you're taking care of patients. It's much easier just to do the rote thing, and the challenge every day is to actually see where you are. You know, so much of the time we're on autopilot, and it's really a challenge to me, at least, to take it off cruise control and really see what's going on and look at the person I'm relating to, or you know, look at the thing I'm writing and not just churn it out.
I think you're asking us to divorce our ego from the outcome, and I find that very difficult because I love praise. I want to be told all the time how cool I am.
Absolutely.
Like more. And so I do. I have plagiarized my you know, maybe not my own words, but my ideas, and sometimes I haven't lifted stuff from other writers, but I'm like, wow, I just love that idea, and then you take writing class, and they're like, no, that's good. That's good. You know,
absolutely.
Let that idea inspire you. Find your own language. But I definitely
the ego.
The
yeah,
there. It's really hard to escape.
You know, one thing I encountered in this reading of William Stafford is he deals with that. He used to do a lot of workshops. He passed away in 93. But he would refuse to praise students, and it really frustrated some other faculty and the students. And he would refuse to castigate those who were the weakest. He just responded with questions like, why did you go there? Do you believe that? Mm-hmm. And one thing that really struck me in my own, because I went through the very same thing with this last album I did, is that a lot of people were kind of like, that's interesting. You know, like, boy, that's just like the death knell for nothing.
Especially in Minnesota.
But, you know, I came around to his quote again, and I said, I had to ask myself, Peter, do you believe this? Do you believe it? Do you believe what you wrote? If you don't, then it doesn't matter what other people think about it. If you do, then it doesn't matter what other people think about it. And, you know, of course, we're communal beings. We want to be together. We want to praise each other. We want to lift each other up. I don't think that is being denied. But to make that the point is where we get into trouble. Because we stop challenging each other, you know, or
you stop writing truth, and you start writing what you think people want to hear. Mm-hmm.
Shall we take another one? Does anybody else have anything? If you do, speak up.
It's interesting hearing about the polluted water, because we're dealing with that here, holding very physically right now, mm-hmm. the stream, but also the
yeah,
our world,
religiously, spiritually
as well, every day, every day.
Yeah, I really appreciated your imagery of division. It seemed to me that you were talking about how our talk and our experience of the spirit, we get divided. We talk about living water, and then we're running out of fresh water, you know what I mean? That's like, what is the bridge there? Okay, whose is this? Would you be kind enough to, and it's in an envelope, it says.
Over here. Awesome.
Is it Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. This is a good one. This is an easy one. I'll read what I wrote on here. This poem was written last week when the weather for many days was chilly and rainy. With this particular combination of a slow, easy rain, cool temperatures, and mountain mist has always been a favorite of mine, and I have always wanted to pay homage to it in a poem. This is it. And the poem is titled A Spring Rain. This is it. This is the cold, clear rain that falls from its own weight out of a soft gray sky. There is no storm. There is no wind to drive it hither and yon. This rain falls straight to earth from the sky. But gently, quietly. Outside my window, the drops tick down on gravel and grass. There is gurgling in the waterspout at the roof's edge. Birds chirp their appreciation. Worms turn in the loosened soil. Flowers bend over in gratitude. And high atop the mountain, into and out of the crevices, God assumes the visible form of the ever-changing mist, rising, spreading, drifting, descending, looking on, approving.
What is your name?
Wanda.
Would anybody like to talk to Wanda?
Wanda, I just want to say I really like that the worms were turning.
I love the bowing flowers. You could picture each little piece of the whole poem. I was here when it happened, and so I remember that feeling of sitting on the porch and seeing everything sort of come this way. And just the smell, and it was like it brought me back to a week ago. It was really nice.
I like God's visible form, the form of God coming out gracefully and covering us.
I like the flowers bending over in gratitude. You see that so often, a flower bending, gets wetter, you're sprinkling it, but then comes back up again. I thought that was a very good time.
And the water falling of its own weight out of soft cloud.
I like that too.
I never really thought of rain that way. So new.
What John mentioned before about the rising of words, when you said gurgling, that would you read that line again, the one that includes gurgling? It was like,
there is gurgling in the water spout at the roof's edge.
There's something about the way those syllables end, that roof's edge, it leaves me with a cadence that I really like. It has a certain rhythm to it. That,
yeah.
Made me think about my reaction to rain coming from Washington. And your reflection was all positive.
Only time to
snow.
It seemed to me that, you know, you pay very particular attention to this and poems. And also that when writing, I think a lot of, you know, I'm not a writer myself, but sometimes I think, well, if you're going to write, you know, you have to have some grand thing to write about, and really you don't, you just need to write out of, like Peter said, your memories, and you need to pay attention.
I don't know what time it is, but maybe one more quick one and then we'll close. Do you know what time it is? Anything?
A couple minutes after.
Okay. This is a piece of music. Would the owner of the writer of this like to?
I think it's fine. I've got the head shirt. This is really short, but yesterday when today when you were playing the song that you had us all join in the chorus, this line came to me because everybody sounded so beautiful in the song. And so this is, and I'm not a writer, and it's funny because I do almost anything to avoid writing. And so I was telling somebody at the table today that I think the Lord knew I needed to be here this week. So it says, a chorus of voices. Sing with me, the leader says. Join in. The strings of the guitar sing. The words of the song are sung. Listen, the voices of the community join in. It sounds so melodious, so harmonious. Listen to the sweetness of praise.
I love the sweetness of praise, that level of praise, I can just feel it. I like the use of the commands, listen, join in, sing. The sounds in the same way the angels said, listen to the sweetness of praise. Like you can't help but hearing it and listening to all this. And you know, that's just exactly what it is, that you hear all around.
I did do this in about 3 minutes this morning, right, sis? She's sleeping. Okay. So it was just one of those things that just kind of flowed. I mean, I had the little thing, the line, came to me yesterday during the singing, and I just kind of remembered that, and then I just sat down this morning. And just,
it sounds like you were there to me. It sounds like you were still in the middle of it. Well, what Patricia said just a minute ago, how in your poem about those little details, I'd like to close with a quote in a little song, a quote from, if I can find this here. Yeah, I think this is it. Yes, okay. What matters? What's too small to say? What's too small to offer? And he says, don't be inhibited, don't be cautious, don't be correct. Just go headlong into the experience. Most writers think they have to overcome the stubbornness of the world and not recognizing what they are doing. But I don't feel that way at all. The welcoming that I got from my mother when I came home from school to tell her what happened on the playground was one of my first publications. I don't think of the arts as something hitting a barrier and then surmounting it. Rather, the arts are a kind of easing into a relation with life that makes it customary for you to respond and interact. And I love that line about my mother, because my mother was one of my big musical inspirations. And I've told the story 1,000 times, but I went through a deal in high school when I practiced guitar 6 hours a day, and that's what I wanted to do. And at one point, a friend asked me to a prayer group, and he said, you know, I'm really worried about whether you're saved or not, because you're playing your guitar all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, now I got to think about that. So I went, and I was about 14 or 15 years old, and I was really scared. And went home and was just creeping around the house going, what is going on? And finally got bad enough to I went to my mom. And I said, you know, I don't understand this. I don't know. He says he doesn't know whether I'm saved. And what does that mean? And she sat me down and gave me the most unscriptural scripture I've ever received. And it's stuck with me all this time. She says, you can't go north or south, east or west far enough to escape these arms of love that have embraced you in your baptism. And you are claimed by God. And this is something you don't do. This is something that God has done for you. And once I heard that, it was just kind of like shoulders lifted, legs straightened. And I emerged. And I got that feeling once again years later with my son, Brendan, when he was going through confirmation and they were having their baptismal talk. And this is a little song for him. This is called Stirring Up the Water.
Indoors, and we're going to, I'd love to try to incorporate some of the poetry and prayer. If anybody else is inspired, the box is going to remain here, but we'd like to gather some of these to be read over a musical setting. If anybody has an idea for a song, that's still wide open. So anyway, encouragement to contribute to that, and we'll try to use that on Thursday. That should probably be taken out and put aside or something so we can make room for new. And
okay.
The other thing is that anybody is welcome to read what's in there. That's another part of the agreement. I forgot to mention that. That's a really important one. If you want to just come in and read what's there, it's not a secret, hidden thing. So maybe, could we do this? Could we mark the ones that have been used today and then put them back in here so other people can read them all?
I got a purple pen.
Okay. Thank you very much.